We're starting this new chapter in Srimad Bhagavatam about the Leela Avatar Matsya, the Matsya incarnation of the Lord. Matsya is a Leela Avatar. Leela Avatar means an appearance of the Lord for a specific pastime. Lord Chaitanya in Chaitanya Charitamrita explained the avatar science in a nutshell to Sanatan Goswami at the end. Chapter 20 of Madhya Leela. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was explaining the different incarnations. He was saying there are the Leela avatars appearing for a specific pastime. There are the Guna avatars, avatars in charge of a particular mode of nature, Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva. There are the Manvantara avatars. They are avatars that appear in each period of Manu, each reign of Manu. And then there are Shaktivesh avatars, empowered incarnations. In this way, also Yuga avatars. Avatars that appear in a particular yuga. You know, when Krishna was getting his name-giving ceremony, his Namakarna ceremony from Gargarishi. Gargarishi explained to Nanda Maharaj, Yashoda Mai and the Brijvasis, Shuklo Rakta Tata Pita Idanim Krishna Tam Gataha. This child has appeared before. In previous yugas, he was white, then reddish, sometimes yellow, now he is blackish. Lord Chaitanya made the point to Sanatana Goswami that actually the avatars are unlimited. That same point is made in Srimad Bhagavatam in the first canto, where it is stated, just like so many rivulets or tiny streams of water pour forth from a main reservoir. Similarly, so many avatars proceed from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You can't count them. Lord Chaitanya told Sanatana Goswami that just like you see the moon between two branches of a tree, this is called Shaka Chandra Nyaya, the logic of using something near to see something far away, because a little child has difficulty craning his head up and looking at the sky to see the moon. But if you say to the little child, see those two branches of the tree, look, and you'll see the moon in between, the child can easily do that. That's Shaka Chandra Naya. But similarly, Lord Chaitanya said, about the brief description of the avatars he's giving. Brief. What does that mean? Well, even though it takes up quite many shlokas in Chaitanya Charitamrita, still the science of avatars is very deep and can get very complicated. If you want to see how deep it can get, you then take note of Laghu Bhagavatamrita by Sanatana Goswami. Sanatana Rupa, okay. But there you find in depth all the avatar technical issues. Sometimes you're reading them, for those of you who read closely the Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, you see things like, well, is this the same Matsya that appeared at this time, or is this the same Varaha that did this? Because you get one account here, one account there. All this is resolved in Laghu Bhagavatamrita. You cannot get to the end of the science of the avatars. So Lord Chaitanya said, we're just showing you the moon in between two branches of the tree. Obviously, the moon is never caught between the branches of a tree. Similarly, the avatars are never caught in the material world. They appear to appear in the material world. Actually, they're not part of the material world. Just like the moon can appear to be in between two branches of a tree, but the moon has nothing to do with two branches of a tree. This is a very important point to understand, and it's made constantly in the Shastra, because we must assimilate it. And the way you assimilate it is by constant hearing. You should ask yourself, why is this point made again and again? It's made again and again because it's a very important point. That the Lord and His incarnations can appear in this world and yet remain completely untouched by the material world. As we were discussing at Shakti Roy Prabhu's house and Namta Vrindavan's Prabhu's Dacha, we are discussing that verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Swayam Bhagavan Krishna Ekale Ishvar Adutiya Nandatmaja Rasika Shekha. The Supreme Lord, Bhagavan, is the only controller, Ekale Ishvar. He has no equal. No one is equal to him, no one surpasses him. He's the reservoir of all pleasure, Rasika Shekha. Yet, Nandatmaja, he appears as the son of Nandamara. We're always given that paradox to meditate on, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, with no equal, unlimited, yet he appears in this world, and he appears as the son of his devotee. You'll derive so much benefit by constantly meditating on this paradox. The same paradox is stated by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. Ajopi sanavyatma bhutanam ishvaropasam prakritam swam adishtaya sambhavami atmamaya. Krishna says, although ajopi sanavyatma, I have a transcendental body that never deteriorates. We always explain, this is number one. Number two, bhutanam ishvaram, I'm the Lord of all sentient beings. Oh, first, number one, I'm unborn. Although I'm unborn, avyatma, number two, I have a transcendental body that never deteriorates. And number three, I'm the Lord of all living entities. Still, I appear in this world. See, this is Krishna making his point. Still, I appear in this world. Although all the other qualifications are there, I can still come to the world and be unaffected. Sambhavami atmamaya. I do it my own way. I have my own personal mechanism for appearing in this world, which is different than yours. Krishna's making that point. You are here, and I may seem to be here. But even if you say I'm here, I didn't get here the same way you did. That is Krishna's point. You were forced to come to the material world. I'm appearing here voluntarily, of my own free will, leela, for my own pastimes. This is the point we're meant to meditate on again and again. And it's constantly discussed in the Shastra. That means it's very important for us to assimilate. And if you properly assimilate this point, what is your reward? Janma karma chame divya evam yo veti taktata chaktva deham panajama naiti mameti sarajuna. If you can understand the mystery, the transcendental mystery of the Lord's janma, his apparent appearance in this world, and his karma, his activities, then upon giving up the present body, you don't take another body. We should meditate on this point. How is it the Lord, although he's transcendental and unlimited, appears within the limited material world? And here, in the first verse of the 24th chapter, the 8th canto, you see Prichit Maharaj referring to the same point. Bhagavan Chocha Ichchami Hareya Adbhuta Karmana. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, is eternally situated in his transcendental position. Yet, he descends this material world and manifests himself in various incarnations. After a while, when you read Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, Chaitanya Charitamrita repeatedly, you stop passing over these things in a mechanical way, and you indeed stop when you read yet. So then you think, yet? What? He descends the material world. But in the first few years, you just kind of, you know, breeze through all this, you know, because your brain is not yet attuned to the Divya Gyan. But just by reading, your brain becomes purified. That's why Srila Prabhupada explained one lifetime is not enough for penetrating the depths of his books. Just when you think, oh, I've heard it all, I've read it all, you read something and then you say, I've never thought of that before. I never even saw that before. These books are spiritual. They reciprocate with you according to your level of spiritual advancement. They are the incarnation of Krishna. Maharaj Pritchett is referring to Sukadeva Goswami as Bhagavan, O Most Powerful. Usually that term is reserved for the Supreme Lord, but sometimes for devotees it can be applied. The devotee is powerful, Bhagavan, because of Krishna. Krishna shares his opulences with his devotees. Because of Krishna, the devotee can be called Bhagavan. Just see how charitable Krishna is. He agrees to share his opulences with his devotees. In fact, he shares so much with his devotees, not simply opulence, aishvarya, but also sweetness, madhurya. He shares that so much that he himself wonders, what is it that my devotees are tasting? What do they taste? What's the pleasure they get from all this that I'm giving out? Let me also be a devotee and taste what they're tasting that I'm distributing. In this way, Sukadeva Goswami can be referred to as Bhagavan. Sometimes Yamaraj is called Bhagavan. Sometimes Narada Muni, when he was visiting the palaces of Krishna and Dwarka, when he would go into a palace, each of Krishna's 16,108 palaces, in some palaces Krishna would welcome him, greetings, Bhagavan! And Krishna would have Narada Muni's feet washed, and he would take the water and put it on his head and that of his wives. Just see, we're afraid of Krishna. You do too much service, you chant too much, you might become too Krishna conscious. We're afraid of Krishna, yet Krishna wants to share everything with us. But we're so attached to some miserly little sense gratification. You know, like a little kid. You know, we got some little kids here. If one little kid gets something, you know, some toy or some marbles or something, holds on tight, you know, doesn't want to share it with the other kids. If you try to take it away, he starts screaming and crying. Although I know none of the kids are like that here. But and the adults all know this is foolish. Sometimes the parent comes out, you know, tells the boy or girl, stop behaving like this, open your hand, give up what you have, or share it with the others. Very foolish and childish for the adults. But just think about our attachments, how we hold on to them so tightly in this world of death. We hold on so tightly and we push Krishna away. Don't get too close, Krishna. I don't want you taking what I've got tightly held in my hands. This is childish. Yes, they were speaking about scientists who are childish. They think just because they made, you know, high definition television that therefore they understand the universe. That is childish. Similarly, it is childish the way we hold on to our material possessions, attachments. Better said, attachments. Because possessions, when you say material possessions, people usually think you're referring to, you know, luxurious objects or cars or this or that or the other, big house, big land. But no. The real definition of possessions means all the gross and subtle baggage that comes along with your material existence. Just to clarify that, we say material attachments, both gross and subtle. We hold on to them desperately, as if these things define our identity. The process of bhakti first cleanses you of the gross attachments, and then it begins to work on the subtle attachments. Lord Kapiladeva, Kardami Kapila, Kapiladeva, the son of Devahuti, Devahuti Putra. He says that bhakti yoga dissolves the subtle body, just like food in the stomach is digested. So, as you have spent some years in Krishna consciousness, you realize that a lot of your problems are coming from your subtle body. So you wonder, what's going to happen? I can refrain from gross attachments, but what to do about my subtle body? It gives me so much trouble. It's stored impressions from countless births. Well, Kardami Kapila explains that bhakti yoga dissolves the subtle body. Let us be fully aware of Krishna's magnanimity. You're not afraid of a magnanimous person. And Krishna comes as Lord Chaitanya, Mahavaranyavatar, the most munificent incarnation, and freely distributes himself, and still we are afraid of Krishna. This is our big problem. Let us meditate on the Lord as Bhaktavatsala. He always reciprocates with affection. And his great characteristic is Britya-vashyata. He comes under the control of his devotee's love. This is how sharing Krishna is. Can we say that we're that sharing? Yet we're afraid of Krishna. So, Sukadeva Goswami is referred to as Bhagavan, O most powerful. Not on his own, but because of his relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Avatara Katam Adyam. Let's hear the pastimes of the first Matsya Avatar, the first fish incarnation. We know, King Pritchard is saying, Adbhuta Karmana. His activities are wonderful. This verse, this term was used just a few verses ago in the previous chapter, where Vamanadeva, his activities were referred to as Adbhuta Karmana, wonderful deeds, wonderful doings. So that Adbhuta Karmana captures the minds of devotees. Everyone likes to meditate on the wonderful activities of a person. So Krishna shows you activities that cannot be equaled or imitated. And the devotee wants to hear. And that is Prichit Maharaj establishing this point. Now, we've always pointed out, whenever Prichit Maharaj asks a question, there's always knowledge packed in with the question. Normally you think, the way you ask a question is, tell me about Matsya Avatar. That would be the kind of the Western way of asking a question. Who is Matsya Avatar? But Prichit Maharaj is at the pinnacle of human culture and beyond. So notice how he asks questions. He establishes a point and then moves further to ask a question, showing his spiritual master, Sukadeva Goswami, I have assimilated the message of the parampara. Now I want to inquire further. So he always has something packed in with his question. Therefore, in Bhagavatam, both the questions and the answers are glorious. What does he have packed in with this question? in which he's asking to hear about the pastimes of Matsyavatar, he says, Maya Matsya Vidambanam. The Lord, Hari, is eternally situated in his transcendental position, yet he comes to this material world, and he takes on the form of a fish, but it's not a material fish. I wish to hear about it. So he has established the Lord's transcendental presence in this world, and then he says, I would like to hear about that transcendental presence. Now this is a brilliant way of asking questions. Prithu Maharaj is not showing off his knowledge. He's churning the ocean of Krishna Katha, Avatar Katha. It's not done out of false ego. He's not trying to show his Guru Maharaj how brilliant he is. No, he's doing this out of service. He's assisting Sri Hari Goswami in churning the ocean of transcendental topics of Krishna. And this way, the chapter begins, and in the purport, Srila Prabhupada informs us that the Matsya avatar is one of the Dasa avatars, the 10 original incarnations of the Lord, sung about by Jayadeva Goswami. Keshava Drita Meena Sharira Jaya Jagadisha Hare. Just like in the morning, you sing, or after Artik. Keshava Drita Narahari Rupa Jaya Jagadisha Hare. You're glorifying Jagadish, Lord of the Universe, who appears as Narahari Nasringhade. Similarly, Keshava Drita Meena Sharira Jaya Jagadisha Hare. You're glorifying the Lord as the fish incarnation, Meena, Matsya Avatar. Lord Chaitanya explained to Satan Goswami that there are 25 basic Leela avatars. Of course, you actually cannot count any of the avatars of the Lord, but 25 are given for you to meditate on. By thinking about Krishna's appearances in this world, in his various forms, you avoid taking this world, this material world, as the all in all. And you lift your vision higher. That the avatars, avatar means that which descends, like an elevator comes down. That the avatars appear in this world naturally makes you want to know, where do they come from? This world is not all in all. And how is it that they appear in this world and do not come under the influence of Maya? And look at my appearance in this world, shackled by the three modes of material nature, embarrassed by having a material body and a material mind. So you begin to contrast your appearance in this world with Krishna's appearance. And in this way, you revive your memory of your original constitutional position. Jivara Swarupoi Krishnaira Nityadas, eternal servant of Krishna. How did you lose track of that constitutional position? We were discussing last night how you never lose your purity. This is explained by Vidura and Maitreya in their dialogue, the third canto, Bhagavatam. Further inquiries by Vidura. Vidura again asks a question packed with perfect presuppositions. Normally when someone presupposes something, someone will object. You presuppose this, but there's no basis for what you presupposed. It's like if I said, taking into account that this is Melbourne. Now, how do people in this city live? You immediately just, you know, your presupposition is wrong. But what Prithu Maharaj and what Vidura do is they state perfect knowledge, taking into account What does Vidura say? He says, the pure soul is always pure consciousness, and never out of such consciousness, either due to circumstances, time, situations, whatever. Therefore, my question is, how does the pure soul fall into nescience? This is a brilliant way to ask questions. Everyone benefits, both by the presuppositions packed into the question and by the question itself. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada explains that in of itself, the pure soul cannot fall into nescience. But the answer lies in the susceptibility of the pure soul to be overcome by the illusory energy. Because the spirit soul is marginal. And then Maitreya answers the question saying that the disruption to the identity of the pure spirit soul is managed by an energy outside of the pure spirit soul. It's a dream. Actually, there is no loss of the purity and original constitutional position. You just dream that you're doing something else. Example given in one purport in that chapter is like, let us say, a child is misbehaving very badly, and the parent will say, if you don't stop misbehaving, I'm going to cut off your head and put it on the wall for you to see. Well, obviously, if your head is cut off, you're not even going to see anything. But similarly, this is what the illusory energy is doing. You are dreaming that you're going through so much trial and tribulation, dreaming you are this body, that mind, but actually, your spiritual purity, your constitutional position is intact the whole time. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says it's like you're being stunned. You're walking down the street and someone hits you over the head with a stick. You don't lose your identity, you're just stunned. You're forgetful. I was speaking last night how just recently, last month in the USA, there was one man who was suffering from the kind of amnesia in which you totally lose your memory if you're under too much stress. So he's from Seattle, Washington, and he found himself in Denver, Colorado. I guess that's like a 24-hour drive away. It's like you're from Brisbane, and suddenly you find yourself almost to Perth. So he didn't know who he was. And so he went on TV. And after the news, they showed him. And he's pleading, does anyone know who I am? Please call in and tell me, what is my identity? Please give me some clue as to who I am. He had no memory of his own identity. So finally, somewhere other, the show was shown on the West Coast in Seattle. And a friend of his fiancé saw it. Because, naturally the family, the fiancé was wondering, where has he disappeared? Where has he gone? So they told the fiancé, and she flew to Denver, Colorado, and brought him back to Seattle. And in this way, his memory gradually started to come back. As at first, he couldn't remember his fiancé at all. He couldn't remember his mother, father, family, nothing. Just imagine what that's like. You can see that if you know anyone who has Alzheimer's disease. It's becoming common these days. Definitely one of the extreme miseries of old age before death comes. I know. I had one distant relative. He was a very educated man, big administrator in New York City, Department of Education, all his life a career man, education, knowledgeable, good bureaucrat. And then he retired and he got Alzheimer's disease. And the nature of that disease is he would be, at night, he would be sleeping, His wife would be there, and suddenly he'd wake up in the middle of the night. Who are you? What are you doing here with me? I'm going to call the police immediately. Yeah, this is, Alzheimer's is very tragic. And so there you see your lifelong companion, you know, suddenly can't remember you, and is calling the police. Then when the attack is over, he remembers. But still, the same thing can happen again the next night. So Alzheimer's disease is known to just put families through misery, because you know, your own relative, your own dearly beloved, doesn't remember you. You can just imagine, you're sleeping at night and your spouse suddenly wakes up. Who are you? What are you doing here? How did you break in here? You're a thief. Really thinks that. Can't recognize you. This is how faulty the material body and mind are, which we adore so dearly. What are you going to do there? All the muscle building, all the cosmetics won't save the situation. What are you going to do about it? So she, his wife would have to call her relatives, and you know, in the middle of the night they have to come get her, and she would stay with them until the situation was stabilized. And finally, you have to put such persons in an old person's home. What else can be done? I know in the case of my father, he's very old now, and he had a very dedicated life of materialism. He wanted to enjoy the finest things. Now he's must be getting near 80, and he was a firm follower of the Hugh Hefner philosophy. That was his that was his mahajja. Playboy magazine was his shastra. He was a proud member of the Playboy Bunny Club Sangha. But now he's pushing 80. His money can't help him except to pay the bills for his care at a facility. Still, he's almost 80, and a lot of times he loses track of his situation. He's demanding of my brother, I want to buy a red BMW today, and I'm going to drive it. My brother's a doctor, so he understands the situation medically. He has to tell him, look, you're not going to go out and get a red BMW. You can't drive it. Because if he drives it, of course, there'll be havoc, there'll be accidents. But because he was an administrator in the New York City Police Department, he was driving into his 70s, because whenever the police would stop him after he did something, wacky, he would just talk police talk to them. And they would, you're one of us, go on driving. Because police, people don't like disciplining their own bunch, you're one of us, you know what you're doing, it's all right, just be a little more careful next time. So this would happen all the time. So just recently, when I was visiting family, my brother told me, my father, he called up the police, and because he can talk police talk, all the official lingo. So and he convinced them to come out because there were people walking on the roof of his complex trying to break in. So he made it sound so official and dramatic, the police coming out with 3 police cars, And then they just find out there's this old man who's, suffering derangement. So this, if you can understand that, Alzheimer's disease and this kind of derangement, then what's the difficulty to understand that the identity, your identity as pure spirit soul, can be disrupted, apparently, by the illusory energy. One potency can overcome another potency, but no potency can overcome the supreme potent, Krishna. Oh, he may voluntarily agree to come under control of his potency. Therefore, we call Srimati Radharani Vrindavaneshri. She's the real controller of Vrindavan. But that is Krishna's arrangement. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, the pure spirit soul becomes stunned. So It's not that you lost your pure identity. You're oblivious to it. Therefore, the four Kumaras say in the fourth canto of Bhagavatam, the soul is lost. That, not that the soul has gone away. No, but your consciousness of the soul is gone, is lost. So these are, this is the Bhagavat knowledge, and we can meditate on our precarious forced appearance in this world and Krishna's divine appearance in this world, in which he's never touched by Maya, never comes under the influence of Maya. All right, any questions? Yes.
Buddha, you're talking about getting rid of attachments or dissolving attachments for things. How do we manifest responsibility and at the same time try to become detached and work on our attachments?
Well, that is the dynamic of the Grihastha Ashram. You are in a temporary situation and a temporary relationship from the material point of view. Spiritually, we're all bound eternally. But it's a temporary relationship based on a temporary body. And the Grihastha Ashram calls for you to accept certain duties. And by your accepting of those duties, you become purified of attachment. That is the mystic yoga of the proper Grihastha Ashram. Therefore, the Shastra is very clear to discriminate between Grihamedi life and Grihastha life. In our lingo, we lump it all together. Anyone who wears tilak and a dhoti, that's a grihastha. Not according to the Shastra. There's a very strict distinction between grihamedi and grihastha. Grihastha means man, woman, living in family situation for the purpose of making spiritual advancement. Krishna's firmly in the center. So this is the glory of the Vanashram Dharma system, particularly Daivi Vanashram. Vanashram Dharma 100% in connection to Krishna. While acting in the material body, in a material situation, because it's Krishna's authorized material situation, you become purified. That is the glory of the Vanashram Dharma system. By accepting material duties, you become purified of material attachment. That's why Srila Prabhupada spoke so often about there has to be a Varnashram Dharma system if you want human civilization. Otherwise, people are doing duties, and not only are they not becoming purified, but they're becoming more degraded. So the Varnashram Dharma system is the system for doing duties in such a way that you become purified, even though you're acting what apparently is acting out apparently what is material responsibility. If Krishna is in the center of your home and you're taking care of your home, then you become purified of attachment. If you're having children, as Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita, dharma varuda bhuteshu kamosmi bharatashiva. If you're having children in the dharmic way, while having children, you become purified of the attachment. This is mercy. So yes, that is the situation of the proper Grihastha Ashram. By accepting responsibility and obligation in relation to Krishna. Krishna is in the center of the relationship. Krishna is in the center of the home. You become purified. Because gradually, after a while, you see, I have to act in the ashram out of duty because the romance fades. As you're explaining this year in our seminars in Russia and Ukraine, the material romantic feelings, how long do they last? What's the scientific average?
6 months.
No, the scientific average is 16 months.
16.
Yes, that's the average. Could be more, could be less. But the point is, not very long. Now you're going to plan out a life's relationship based on an experience or state of mind that lasts on the average 16 months. After 16 months, on the average, your head stops spinning. You know, you suddenly realize, you know, you're out of the clouds and on the ground again. And then what?
Get divorced.
That's why some people are addicted just to getting into one romance after another. They like that spin that their head goes through. And material scientists point out that the experience of so-called falling in love is accompanied by certain chemicals released in your brain, and you get a kind of high off of it. Just like, for example, it is known that when women nurse their babies, there's chemicals released in the brain that make them feel peaceful and happy. Also, I don't know why all the research seems to come out about women, but I guess, you know, that's the scientist's preoccupation. But also, when women talk to each other about their problems, they feel better, not because the problem is solved, but because as they talk to each other, again, the chemicals are released in the brain and they feel good, even though the problem hasn't been solved. And the men can understand this. Be practical. This same problem is there. No, I feel better now. It's okay. But we're completely in debt, and you know. But I talked about it with so and so. I feel better now. Anyway, this is the way of material nature. I'm sure men also, obviously, because it's a conditioned body, a material body, they have their ways too. So, if you base a relationship simply on that romantic attraction, how long can the relationship last? It's doomed to failure. Unless you sooner or later realize duty is the binding principle. Kali Yuga means sense gratification is the binding principle. I've even had persons tell me, sense gratification is the glue of the marriage. Well, then it's not going to last long because... No, the real glue is duty. But to people today, duty sounds like a very unattractive thing. Duty, where's the fun? Duty, something you have to do. No, duty is a very deep, profound thing. Vedic culture teaches that. That duty brings with it deep realizations and much deeper affection than just some romantic buzz. So therefore, the magic of the Grihastha Ashram, and actually any of the four ashrams, is that by executing duties and obligations, you become purified of attachment.